We're back, hour two, and just looking forward to a visit with Jay Privman. And Jay was live tweeting, as he does, even when he's in the room, in the ballroom of the Eclipse Awards. Jay, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. And looking forward to your postscript. I always say the same thing. This is the visit that boxes up the previous year, and it's put into the shelves along with the Ark in Raiders of the Lost Ark. We put it up into the archives.
Yes, turn the page on 2020, right?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't think there were very many surprises. To me, the only surprise that, you know, oftentimes the horse of the year, you know, the tentacles reach to others. I mean, we saw it quite strongly last year with Bricks and Mortar, with
right.
Rod Ortiz and Chad Brown, and, you know, Seth Klarman and Bill Lawrence all winning awards. But the, you know, the tentacles this year for Authentic were non-existent. I mean, he was roundly acclaimed in his categories, both for, you know, the horse of the year vote and for you know, for 3-year-old male, but none of the other human connections got Eclipse awards. Not that, I mean, the ones who won in those categories were certainly deserving. I just thought it was interesting that it played out that way.
No, a fair point. And I you know, personally, from a one category element that touches on that, I kind of railed to start the show about the Team Authentic, who I didn't even think belonged in the owner, you know, as an owner finalist. Not when there's people out there that are campaigning and breeding dozens of horses and, you know, winning considerable races. I mean, you know, vis-a-vis the Gary Barber situation, I didn't get the presence of Team Authentic as an owner finalist.
Right. I mean, I voted for Gary Barber, so I couldn't believe he didn't finish in the top three, let alone win. You know, you could obviously make a significant case for Saul Kuhman, who I think ends up being hurt by running under different stable names. But, I mean, he was part of the Authentic group, but he also owns, you know, significant portion of Monomoy Girl and is in on Whitmore as well. But, you know, at least Godolphin winning, you know, they had a champion in essential quality. They had other top horses throughout the year. That, you know, you can make a legitimate mm-hmm. case for them as being, you know, as being a strong vote. And so I didn't have a problem with them winning. I just thought, you know, there were other, you know, one or two other candidates that were, in my mind, you know, more deserving, but they were not undeserving in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, there were, you know, the usual scattering of oddball votes in here, but nothing that impacted the, you know, the final outcome. I just think there's some votes here that I there's always, you know, the one-offs of either people who aren't paying attention or just maybe seeking attention for doing something provocative. But it didn't impact any of the titles.
On that topic, and you go through them, anything else in there that jumped out? I mean, I glanced at them last night and didn't go back to them this morning, but was there anything that, you know, it seemed that so much was, you know, decisive?
The two closest votes were, you know, for people, it was a really tight vote for Apprentice Jockey, where Alexander Crispin beat Yarmory Correa by only 5 votes. So that was, yeah, you know, 79-74. Louis Cardenas had 38. A number of voters abstained in that category. There were 28 who didn't vote. And the other one that was close, and this to me was a very oddly voted upon category, was Female Turf Horse. Rushing Fall beat Tarnawa by 9 votes. But what I found odd is that Magical got 8 votes, which was, and she had one race in this country and was beaten by Tarnawa. So I don't know how you even justify a vote like that. And you and I have talked about, you know, the situation with one-offs in this country getting votes. And my thought on it is, you know, those are viable candidates when there's nobody in this country who's put together a strong campaign. So, you know, I preferred Rushing Fall over Tarnawa or Adaria, but there were, you know, plenty who voted for the one-offs in that category. But like I said, the, you know, Magical having the third most number of first place votes is, I don't understand how you arrive at a decision like that.
No, fair point. And conversely, I was a little surprised how overwhelming Channelmakers' total was.
Well, I think that just speaks to how the, you know, what that division ended up being.
Right.
I mean, Order of Australia got 15 votes. Off a one-off in this country. You know, Zulu Alpha, you know, he really suffered from the recency factor. I mean, he was very good the first part of the year, and in fact, finished, won the Pegasus, but unfortunately, he didn't run the last part of the year when Channelmaker was winning 2 Grade Ones and finishing third in the Breeders' Cup Turf. And so it was, you know, that was not the strongest division, and it just, I think, showed that there was no, you know, there were no better alternatives. You know, Europeans won, both the grass races. So, you know, with the Order of Australia and the mare coming over and beating the boys in the turf. So it was just, you kind of held your nose and picked someone.
Hmm. Jay, from a, I've been sort of, hinting at this all morning, knowing that you were as equally aghast as I was, from a production standpoint, you know, the way this was crafted was actually quite, you know, the utility of it was quite good. There was a miscue that was just inexcusable.
Well, there was more than a miscue. There were several miscues from. There were a couple of pronunciations that were poor, but there were several glaring typos in pre-produced graphics. Now, look, let's back up a second. You know, this had to be an incredibly challenging thing to put together under the circumstances with, you know, all the different elements and pre-taped presentations from people who were all over the country. You know, Gary Stevens and I had done stuff at Santa Anita, for instance. You know, then there were all the acceptance speeches that were done either on site, like with the authentic crew at Spendthrift, or, you know, it looked like Arad Ortiz was done at Gulfstream. You know, there were a lot of elements to bring together here. It had to be a head-hurting thing to do, but it's inexcusable to have graphics that have typos in it. And the one that just pissed me off the most was in the In Memoriam for Barry Abrams, who was identified as Barry Adams. That's just, you can't excuse that. It's appalling. It's insulting. Whoever edited that should call Diane Abrams and profusely apologize to her for that. It really pissed me off. But then you had, you know, Barbara Banky, who's pretty well known and actually helps sponsor the Eclipse Awards every year with wines from her family cellar, you know, her first name was misspelled in a graphic. And Alex Evers, an Eclipse Award winner for photography, his last name was misspelled. And there were more. You know, Joel Rosario was pronounced Joel in the video for announcing the three finalists. There was a lot, but, you know, the graphics were bad all night. And, you know, a couple of them were just like, made you go like, you got to be kidding me. How do you not know that? But the Barry Abrams one just infuriated me.
It was a wincing and just There's certain areas that you have to, you know, you just have to get right.
I can't imagine how many people must have looked at that how many times.
Yeah.
That's a pre-produced package with all the, you know, all the photos and the ID of all the people that were in there. You know, that's not, you know, more than one person had to look at that.
True.
So that was bad. I mean, really bad.
Yep.
But like I said, you know, at the beginning, excuse me, you know, this had to be an incredibly challenging thing to put together. And you have to be better. You know, both can be true.
Hmm. Yep. 2020, in the books officially, with this production wrapped up. Let's turn our attention, Jay, to the three-year-old picture and also some Santa Anita action. Of course, no racing today in New York and California with different kinds of weather issues. Out of curiosity, actually, I probably should save this, but how impactful do we expect the wet weather to be into tomorrow for the Lewis?
Well, I'm thinking that the track's got a chance to be in really good shape because, you know, they've known this weather was coming and they canceled Friday's races. And by the way, it's pouring at my house right now. They canceled Friday's races on Tuesday officially, but you could see it coming last Sunday when they postponed entries for 48 hours. So they officially on Tuesday said no racing Friday. And they've closed the track for training this morning, which means that they were able to, you know, from a maintenance standpoint, do to the main track what you could to try and pack it down, seal it, whatever you want to do in advance of a known rainstorm. And the tracking of the storm is such that it's supposed to be out of here by, you know, early this evening, which would give the track, pardon me, Steve, would give the track maintenance crew, you know, time to get the track whipped back into really good shape, I think, for racing tomorrow.
Good.
So I'm, you know, at this point in time, encouraged that, or hopeful, that they're going to have a really good track for racing for tomorrow at Santa Anita.
Good. That would be nice. Because certainly it's a fascinating group. Before we talk about that and the San Pasqual and even the Holy Bull in Florida, Jay, some thoughts about last week. And of course, every week I recirculate when you put out your Derby Watch recap of the prep season and the Smarty Jones result. Caddo River certainly had people talking.
He ran off the screen. I don't know what to make of the race because he was running against nothing. I mean, that was not a strong field. But I like the way he did it. He obviously can handle the distance. He shouldn't have any problem going any farther. He got a strong figure, and he's going to be based at Oaklawn, where they've got a terrific series of races leading up to the Kentucky Derby. So, you know, there's a lot to like there. I liked his race a lot. I just, you know, like I wrote on Twitter, it definitely falls for me under the category of yeah, but who'd he beat? You know, that said, it was a strong race with a good fig, and he's made good progress in all of his races. So I'm looking forward to seeing him run against better horses. But it was a good performance. I don't want anything else out of the race. The rest are not Kentucky Derby quality horses.
We'll watch and wait for the next go round. How about a little speculation on the maiden breakers? Because we talked earlier in the week to both Brendan Walsh, who had a nice Saturday with Zafel winning the Marshawas River, and Prevalence flashing across people's screens. And then Doug O'Neill was on as well. Doug did the same thing. He had a stake win, Wildman Jack on the main in the Palos Verdes. And then the great one, who You know, again, smallish field, some horses were well thought of, but both of these maiden breakers look like they've got some upside, and they're going to get their cameos on the Derby trail.
Well, certainly, you know, the great one we've already seen run well. It's got beat, you know, barely in the Los Alamitos Futurity, and he's had a number of starts. You know, his race was odd in that nobody else in the race ran. And he also, you know, ran off the screen kind of like Caddo River. But he got a good fig in the race, and he's shown already that he's, you know, he's a nice horse. He had run well in the Los Alamitos Futurity. I don't think that was the strongest Los Alamitos Futurity, but he ran well in it, and he's continuing to take steps forward. That was certainly his best race. And, you know, I don't think there's any substitute for experience sometimes with some of these horses, and he's certainly benefiting by, you know, the more racing that he does, the better he's getting. You know, as for Brendan's horse Prevalence, he was extremely impressive, but, you know, it's a long ways to go from a sprint win in January to the Kentucky Derby winner's circle. And I think, a lot of times people get just way ahead of these kinds of horses. And I realize it happened 3 years ago, but it doesn't happen very often.
Yes.
In the future betting last weekend, there were people betting on horses that haven't even run yet and making them like the, you know, what, sixth or seventh overall choice?
Yes.
It's just, man, oh, man. Good luck.
Yes. Let's start in on the two preps and start in Florida, Jay, because this is, I don't know, it's a different, kind of a different group.
What does that mean, Steve?
I don't know. I looked at this race, and not that you know, we haven't seen the wins from Prime Factor and Greatest Honor, and of course Sitting on Go was a 2-year-old, but it still feels like there's potential for people and for, you know, connections and horses in here, you know, to kind of make a name for themselves tomorrow.
That's fair. I mean, these are obviously ones that are, you know, trying to get to the next level and, you know, get to the level of an essential quality or horses of that standpoint. Prime Factor's race I thought was really good, but, you know, it's going from a 6-furlong sprint to a 2-turn race against winners and a stake and all that. It's, you know, it's a lot to ask, but he's, you know, certainly bred that the distance is not going to be any problem whatsoever. So I'm looking forward to seeing how he does in this. Greatest Honor is a horse that I know Shooks had high hopes for, and he looks like he's the kind that's just taken a while to come around, and that's fine. I mean, so did Orb, and he, you know, same kind of thing. It just took him a while, and then he had that great barnstorming winner through the races at Gulfstream, and it resulted in a Derby winner. So I'm looking forward to seeing how Greatest Honor does, see if he continues to take steps forward, because he's never taken a step back on his buyer fig. He's only topped out in 83 so far, but he certainly looks like he's not reached his peak yet. You know, Sitting on Go, I think we've discussed him before. I just think he's one of those one-run, one-turn horses that fool you when they're going to go 2 turns. I thought that after the way he won the Iroquois. It was a fast, early, slow, late kind of race that I thought fell into his lap. And, you know, his two subsequent races going 2 turns were, for me, confirmation that he does not want to go 2 turns. So I'll see if he surprises me tomorrow and shows that he wants to go 2 turns, but he won't have my money in that race.
There's three parties in here that have actually, you know, from a fig standpoint, especially for those that are sheet readers, Willie Boy, Jeff Engler, and Papatou, and Awesome Jerry have all got, you know, single digit figs that portend for some potential. That's kind of my my theme in here. I just, you know, they're horses that we've seen run in some stakes, not Willie Boy. He's coming out of a state bred maiden and, you know, Florida, those Florida bred races that Gulfstream writes. But Papatou and Awesome Jerry have been kind of nosing around, you know, stakes company. And I don't know. Either one won't surprise me if they, you know, were to invade the exotics here.
Right. I mean, the two that you mentioned, I mean, they both come out of the Mucho Macho Man, and they ran a decent race, you know, behind a horse who's since gone off the Derby trail, but they ran well in that race. You know, the two, Steve, you know, Papatou interests me a little bit more. I thought before he went to Saratoga last year that he'd run a couple of nice races at Gulfstream, and then he had the time off, and I thought he came back with a good, solid effort in his return in the Mucho Macho Man. So maybe he's just a Gulfstream Park kind of horse, but I want to see. You know, he intrigues me as kind of a horse who, at a price, could get into the gimmicks tomorrow. So I like him a little bit more than Awesome Jerry. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Awesome Jerry. He's got good sharp speed, but I just don't know that he's. I think the other horse is a potentially better prospect.
One storyline, considering when we get to the Lewis and Spielberg's involvement, interesting. The Baffert barn was able to separate Tarantino from Spielberg, and some thoughts about the first dirt start for Tarantino in here.
Yeah, I don't know why they never gave him a chance on dirt out here. They started him on grass. And you know, both his races here were perfectly fine, and then they decided to send him to Rudolph Brissett. You know, stayed on the grass and then won. So he's a nose away from being undefeated, and he deserves a shot on dirt. I mean, why wouldn't you at this time of year give him a shot? You know, at least if it doesn't work out, you know, he's a nice grass horse. I don't know though why he never got a shot on the dirt out here before. You know, before being relocated by his connections.
Pioneer the Nile out of Seeking the Gold Mare, a Hertrick Fielding production, and a $600,000 purchase. And Baffert started him right on the grass, and he won. It's not like he didn't perform, and he ran well in the Zuma Beach before coming east. So Tarantino with a dirt try in here. The Holy Bull, the takes us toward the fountain and to the Florida Derby Trail. Jay, let's kick west and talk about that Robert Lewis.
This, to me, is an above-average potential version of a grade $300,000 race out here. It's got two for Baffert, two for Doug O'Neill, two for John Sheriff. We've got the second-place finisher in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and Hot Rod Charlie making his first start since he only got beat three quarters of a length by the champion of the division. You've got Rum Bauer, who was fifth in that race and was second in the American Pharoah prior to that. You know, Medina Spirit ran a big race behind Life is Good in the Sham 4 weeks ago. You know, Wipe the Slate and Roman Centurion both chased Life is Good when they all debuted at Del Mar. And then coming out of that race, Life is Good wins the Sham. Wipe the Slate beats Maidens, sprinting. And Roman Centurion goes two turns and beats Maidens. So they're coming out of strong races. And then you've got, you know, Spielberg, who we were just talking about earlier, in the context of the Great One, and even with Tarantino, you know, coming out of the Wausau Futurity, which he won. You know, I've always thought he's just an okay horse. His career best buyer is still just 83. So I think he's ripe for being defeated. But it's a good race. It's above average group for this kind of a prep race.
Agreed. And there's some subplots. I will mention. Actually exchanged some notes. I guess Ron Bauer is not 100% to go. They're a little bit on the fence, so watch for the potentially for decision there. And Jay, we should note, I brought this up yesterday. One horse in here, Roman Centurion, who some people are you know, thinking, you know, given Callahan and his ability with you know, with young horses, is coming off Lasix from that maiden win. And of course, you know, with the point system and with the rules put in place by Churchill, no points if you're running on Lasix. And so, I mean, any thoughts about you know, how we're supposed to handle this kind of decision? And there's going to be more and more of this as the year goes on.
Right. Well, first off, I mean, yes, Churchill has the rule regarding Lasix for Derby preps, but at Santa Anita, you know, all stakes are run without
right.
Lasix. So it's not like, you know, there was the option here to forego the points and still run on Lasix. You know, if you're running in a stake at Santa Anita, you cannot use Lasix. But yeah, Roman Centurion is coming off Lasix. He's the only horse in this race who ran as a three-year-old in a non-stake race. So he's the only one in the field that is coming off Lasix. And yeah, it's something that, you know, we have to consider in every one of these instances now. You don't know if it mattered or not. You know, he's certainly bred to be a distance horse. He looked like it in his debut, and he looked like it in his debut when he sprinted, and he looked like it in his second start when he ran two turns. Did the Lasix make the difference? I'm inclined to think not, but you don't know how much, you know, even if it made him, you know, 5% better, it's still something. So it's one of the things that, as handicappers, we have to navigate in every one of these instances now.
Yep.
I wouldn't, you know, if I liked him, it would not stand in the way of my gambling on him.
Sure.
In this specific case, you know.
No, I just...
He hasn't looked like a horse who was a bleeder. You know, there's... Because the other instances where you're going to be wondering, like, oh, boy, this horse is coming off Lasix, and he's run 15 times, and he's... You know, he's had a couple of just races where he stopped. And God, does that mean he's a bleeder? I don't know. You know.
Exactly. No, this is fun. Race goes off at 6:30 Eastern, 3:30 Pacific, and this is a serious group. And we move toward the San Felipe and the Santa Anita Derby. Jay, I know you. I don't think you did the advance. Maybe Steve Anderson did, but thoughts on the San Pascal?
Yeah, Brad Free wrote that story. It's an interesting race with, you know...
I agree.
...with King Guillermo shipping in. But I'm a huge fan of Idols. I really liked the couple of, you know, few races that he ran at Churchill, including his first-level allowance win in early November. And he's a horse I've kind of had on my radar as one that could really move into a depleted older horse division with all the retirements out of that division out here and had the potential to step up and do well. And he ran a big race in the San Antonio in his stakes debut. He certainly acted like he was just getting warmed up at a mile and a 16th. So I think the mile and an eighth of this race, and especially the mile and a quarter of the Santa Anita handicap, are going to be much to his liking. You know, the only thing that's a little bit disconcerting is that, you know, Kiss Today Goodbye didn't run all that well coming out of the race in the Pegasus last week. He ran, you know, so you just wonder if the form of that's going to hold up. But I think Idol has got the potential to be a big player in this division out here this year, and, you know, tomorrow could be his coming out party to those in the around the country who don't really know of him quite yet. I don't know what to make of King Guillermo. He's had such a bizarre career. You know, came off the long way off and ran like a freak in the Tampa Bay Derby and ran well in the Arkansas Derby. And then they trained him up to the Kentucky Derby, but he had a setback there, so they had to wait. And then it wasn't until 3 months later when he goes to New York and runs in the Cigar Mile. You know, now he's coming out here. He's just had... It just doesn't seem like they've gotten into any sort of a rhythm with him. So
yeah.
I just don't know what to make of him. My instinct is to be against him, but he's run, you know, a couple of huge races in his career. The Tampa Bay Derby and the Arkansas Derby performances were both terrific. So, but I'm a big fan of and I'm looking forward to seeing him run tomorrow.
Well, and Jay, I don't know if you realize it at a glance, but finishing here with Idle is a perfect companion to the opening regarding wrapping up the Eclipse Awards and putting them in the box and like Raiders of the Lost Ark, because Idle is out of Marion Ravenwood.
Wah, wah.
Tip your servers. I'll be here all week, at least until noon. did that fall flat? No, it didn't. Didn't really. No,
I don't know. I mean, who knows? Your millions of listeners might be rolling on the floor laughing right now. It's hard to know.
Well, yesterday I had one. I thought was going to be a natural regarding a runner at Sam Houston. I Dashiell was a horse I was interested in at 12-1, but he ended up scratching. And I mentioned on Twitter that I was upset that Dashiell came out of the race, because I thought that if he was a winner, he'd have a potential to ham it up in the photo.
Oh my God! Boy, ever since that grandson arrived, you've really gone big with the dad jokes, haven't you?
DRF Ribman, everybody, and are you going up tomorrow?
Oh yeah,
nice. I figured. All right, we'll be watching for.
It's the stuff, just to come back to what you were just talking about. It's the stuff that dreams are made of.
Well, after that running of the Astra a couple of weeks ago, I mean, you know, you never can tell when the next big performance is coming.
Well, I was referring to the Maltese Falcon. So,
oh, nicely done, nicely yeah. done, Jay. Great work on the Eclipse coverage, and now we can really focus in on Derby watch season.
Yes, looking forward to the big races from coast to coast tomorrow, and we'll have analysis of both those races up at drf.com by Sunday afternoon.
Jay Pribman, everybody, DRF Pribman on your Twitter timeline. Jay, talk next week.
All right, Steve, take care.
Jay Pribman, folks, we'll stay right here, and we'll take it toward the top of the hour, because standing by, we've got Nick Tamaro, and it's a huge weekend. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. We're going to talk about Sunday at Sam Houston in a minute, and I guess as part of that, some Sam Houston recapping. Far be it from me to critique Morning Lines. I don't trade in that. But I'll tell you, some money is gravitating toward horses that has been very savvy the last couple of cards I've played.
So there were two yesterday that ended up looking like complete misses on my part. C-Dub in the fifth, and then Wicked City in the nightcap, both of whom, now I went back through watching the races to see what I had missed, and there were scratches in both.
Yes.
I'm sorry, there was actually not a scratch in the fifth. There was a scratch in the last that probably contributed, but, I mean, look, when you make a horse 15-1 and they go off 7-2 and they win, you look stupid, which is going to happen invariably. And I think it was partially that, there's so many factors that go into these things. The 10-5 drop is not insignificant. And Carl DeVille has now run three live horses at the meet. So, yeah, I think that was a race that I thought was going to go certain directions betting-wise, and it didn't quite go that way. And that made a huge difference.
Yeah, it's funny because I put my ticket in, and then wasn't really paying attention for a few minutes, and then it got to be, I don't know, maybe 2 minutes to post, and so I brought RTN back up, and I saw the price on the 11. I was like, oh boy, and you know right away that you got a problem, and I wasn't going to cancel and try to rebuild tickets. I should have at the very least just, you know, thrown a wind cover. But I mean, he was so low that it was that even that was I thought was not worthwhile. So I watched in horror.
Yeah, it's like watching a train come across the tracks. You know it's coming. You can't do anything
exactly.
to help it.
Exactly
one
right.
thing I'll say, and I don't have very specific data to back this up with, but it's more anecdotal than anything else. C-Dub ran opening weekend, and I felt like that Saturday, especially the 9th and the 8th, both, it was very difficult to be inside. And if you looked yesterday at, I still think it's going on to some extent. And I think when horses are dropping down to the inside, I think it's hurting their chances. If you watched the second race, the big favorite who was drawn inside, Texas Crossbow crosses over around the turn, drops down to the inside the quarter pole, and all of a sudden he starts swimming at the 16th pole. So the first race itself, Millwood and Earn Never Given are outside the entire way. And finally, you know, catch their stride around the 8th pole because the leader dropped down to the rail. I think the rail is a disadvantage. C-Dub was on the rail last time. Last night had a 3-wide trip, stalking outside. Obviously had been bet because he was expected to run a better race and ran significantly better. So I think he may have been helped by taking advantage of the track profile last night after being maybe a little bit against the grain the time before. And I'm going to have to go through and watch more replays and get a little bit more ironclad information. But I think if you're watching the dirt races at Sam Houston regularly, you're seeing an outside flow to a lot of them. There was one wire-to-wire winner last night, Misty Shark, in the third, who actually looked like she won despite maybe racing against the profile and even didn't quite extend away from those horses in the stretch like you expected her to, being down inside. So it's just something to keep an eye on. It could also differ by the time of day. You know, we'll see if something like that happens on Sunday afternoon and Saturday we're supposed to get a little bit of rain, which could change things a bit. So one thing to keep an eye on.
Well, I'm glad you brought up that part of it. I've got to ask, too, about that ninth race, because I thought, you know, after he got knocked out of the pick six, regrouped, played pick five, pick four, and thought was on the way to a, to cashing and Run Ballerina. And I it's funny, yesterday with Chris Griffin, And Chris and I are having a lot of fun on Wednesdays, having our go at the Thursday card. I was not convinced that True Friend was, an absolute, guarantee slam dunk single and win. Something was just, the horse like this, and for 10,000, something didn't seem right. But if I was going to use others, it was going to be, especially after the scratch of Princess Shakira, who I thought on the square, I thought Shakira I would have used had she run. Metallic Silver kind of moved up a little bit after that. And Zoe's Gold Lady, I thought at a price, was actually not impossible. But Run Ballerina, I got to tell you, I went back. I even if I had gone against True Friend, I can't use that filly.
No, she was very hard to find. I thought the Dream and Tiger was the only other one besides the two that you mentioned that you could maybe embrace a bit. But yeah, Run Ballerina, I mean, look, extremely low percentage connections. And it was just a matter of, I guess the approach you had to take was that if you didn't like True Friend, you could throw a blanket over the rest of them. Because they really weren't, maybe one didn't really stick out, but this was a hard one to get to. And I think that certainly for a lot of people that derailed their multi-race plays, especially with the, low percentage Bug Rider on and Ron Katara runs a lot of horses, but he usually wins about a race or two for the meet. So yeah, I thought that was a tricky spot to find that one. But again, True Friend looked even more like a horse that you wanted to bet against at that time of the night, given that she was drawn inside at 5 furlongs and really doesn't have any speed. So it was a great opportunity to bet against. She was one of those horses that you couldn't really find as an alternative.
Since we started in on Sam Houston, let's actually talk about Sunday and get some, get some of the opinions in now.
Yeah, as far as the racing festival goes, I mean, it's probably not the strongest running of the Houston Ladies Classic, but there are good horses lined up, and And I think some horses that can do good things throughout the rest of the year and continue to raise the profile of this race. Actually, Chris was telling me the other day when we were talking that people thought that Latruska was too short a price on the morning line. And I asked them if they had looked at the PPs yet, because I made her even money and actually think she'll end up going off somewhere around 3-5, considering she has an enormous pace advantage on this field and comes in excellent form, which is really something you can't say about any runner in the field, maybe with the exception of Ujjayi. And I don't think you'd call Ujjayi's form anything better than just maybe slightly above average. So I think Latruska is a horse that I hope she wins, because I think she's got an opportunity down the line to win, you know, another major and meaningful race, maybe a grade one or a grade two, and is a horse that when she's, you know, she does her thing. She's got a lot of speed. She's going to go to the front and try and control this race from the start. Obviously, Lady Apple is going to get some support. The problem is Lady Apple, since last year's Houston Ladies Classic, has really been kind of bad and was not particularly compelling in the Spanky Broussard last time at Fairgrounds. So I think expecting her to run an improved race seems like a little bit of a risk that you don't want to take. So I'm not going to use any alternatives in the multi-race bets. I think that I'm expecting Latruska to wire this field, and there are competitive races around it that can help you juice your exotics up, and really no point in giving her a whole lot of help. The Texas Turf Mile, this is the second running of it, and boy, it looks like it's going to have a grade attached to it very, very soon. It's been a very productive race already. Last year's running, I think, yielded four subsequent stake winners, and this feels like something that could happen as well. Todd Fletcher is only sending one of his two. I've not been told exactly who. I believe it's Win From Within, so I don't think Fighting Force is coming. I can also tell you that you can take out Peter Urton's Harlan Estate, and so they were trying to find out if both AEs were going to be willing to go. I would imagine Broberg's will, and we'll see about TD Dance. This is a really terrific race, and there's, if Win From Within goes, I think you're going to have a pretty strong early pace, and that's going to help a few horses that want to come from a little bit off of it. Excess Magic has just improved by leaps and bounds in his last two starts since stretching out on the turf for Brett Calhoun, and looks like he'll end up going off the favorite, I would say, if Fighting Force gets scratched, because Win From Within is drawn outside. So I thought that he was a horse you wanted to be very interested in. Palazzi on the inside should be able to save ground. Obviously has a big late kick given the performance of that maiden win. It looks like a very dangerous horse to me. I would say that you probably want to be careful about excluding a horse like Chess's Dream. I had to make Chess's Dream a little bit of a longer price on the morning line because his figure was slow from last time, but this is a Mike Maker horse that's now getting Lasix for the first time, second time on turf. Granted, facing much, much better than he did last time out, but you feel like there's still a lot of upside there in a race where it's going to be competitive no matter what. I mean, you could be looking at a favorite in the neighborhood of 3-1.
And I'm trying to check right now with Todd on which horse can get a confirmation on which of the runners. Fighting Force will be the one running.
Okay, so not Win From Within. Okay, interesting.
I just got it back from Todd. There we go. I appreciate that from TP. And, wow, how about that?
You know, Steve, I mean, the stuff that people can get on your show doesn't just stop with esoteric movie references with Jay Pratt. There's so much more to it than that, including up-to-the-minute Todd Fletcher information. And, I mean, that's better. Who the hell needs Twitter when you can get information like that? No, that's very interesting. I thought he'd run Win From Within. I don't really know why I thought that. But I guess being drawn outside in a race with a good deal of speed, he probably felt like it might be better for another day for Win From Within. Well, look, obviously Fighting Force is a major contender. It would be foolish to exclude him. He, you know, I thought he maybe underperformed a bit in the Dania Beach last time as the favorite. I think sometimes these Pletcher horses down in Florida get just a huge amount of support, and we expect maybe a bit more than they're capable of. But I think with any kind of move forward, he'll be very dangerous in a race that looks, again, like it could go, you know, five or six different ways.
I want to stress, I mentioned this yesterday, I thought Palazzi inside was very live in here, and the two that I wanted were Fighting Force and Palazzi.
Yeah, I'm going to mainly use those two. I'm going to use Excess Magic for sure as well, just because it looks like he might still have some room to move forward as well. I mean, obviously, if he runs back to his last speed figure, they're all in very, very big trouble. Yeah, I mean, and so those two start off the late pick four. They give way to the John Connolly, which is a race that Mike Maker has won, I think, 24 times. A kid, it's actually seven. The race has only been run, I think, 23 times. So it's kind of funny, and he's won it. He actually did not win it last year. Last year it was won by the venerable New York-bred Dot Matrix, owned by, of course, our friend Marshall Graham, who wanted to run Dot Matrix back, but he's getting a little bit of time off. He could certainly resurface in this race next year as, I believe, a nine-year-old. This is a fun group. It's really what it boils down to, I think, in terms of handicapping, is exactly how confident you feel in Spooky Channel, because Spooky Channel is better than these horses on his best day. It's just a question of trust, and you know, he's not won a race now since last summer at Churchill. That was going shorter. I don't think the mile and a half is any issue at all. He's obviously a winner at this kind of trip, and he probably got a little bit of a tightener last time out in the Fort Lauderdale, faced much better horses that day, faced better horses in the Manhattan. He's clearly the horse to beat. I think if you're looking for alternatives, there are some. I don't think it's crazy to think that Tut's Revenge can take this field a long way. I'm not certain he can wire it, but this is a horse that's improved quite a bit of late. I don't think the distance is going to be that much of a problem when push comes to shove if Ry Eikelberry can get him to relax on the front end. And he's a horse that I would include at a big price. I don't think there's any reason not to. Conviction Trade, I made the second choice on the morning line, and I know his figures look about the same as everybody else's. The horses that are trained by Maker are going to get a lot of money in this race based on the way his horses have done in this particular race. So I felt like Conviction Trade would get the most of that lot of them, given that Marzo's coming off the layoff and A Journey to Freedom looks like he's a little bit of a cut below. But you could also grant that the mile and a half may be something that he takes to quite nicely, as we've seen Maker horses improve quite a bit. Tenfold is a horse that probably is going to get money. I just don't know what to do with him. The figure came back really fast in that Diliberto Memorial, and Logical Myth came back and backed it up. Cross Border came back and ran well as well. So maybe Tenfold is a horse you should be looking at. Maybe the mile and a half is what he wanted all along. You know, he didn't really run that great going long on the dirt two back, but you know, maybe he wanted the turf, and maybe the turf is an opportunity for him to move forward a little bit. So he's a horse I think that you'd want to include.
I felt the same way. I made that same case, and that try at Fairgrounds was very encouraging. I mean, if you're looking for, you know, for some reference on his turf aptitude.
Yep, I think that's fair to say. And then, of course, the nightcap is the Jersey Lily, which is a race that was won last year by Winning Envelope. I would imagine in the Jersey Lily, Catch a Bit is going to go off a pretty big favorite. I don't think that it's an easy thing to do, taking turf routers off of Chad Brown. But Joe Sharp has this filly off of now mare off of a layoff. She was purchased for $180,000 in November. A little light for a stake winner, but of course there's not a great deal of pedigree here. And she's facing a group of horses she's supposed to beat if she's at the same level. If for some reason she has taken a step backwards, I think it opens the door for a lot of potential, I wouldn't necessarily call them upsetters. I don't think Morning Molly is a horse that would need to improve quite a bit to win this race at all. Neither is Stunning Sky. I think Morning Molly has a bit of an edge, having a little bit more tactical speed. So I think as far as multi-race plays go, I'm going to end them with Catch a Bid, and I'm going to help as backups with the 7 and 8 and keep it pretty simple.
Nice. Anything else from around the card? Frank, I don't know if you heard Frank Hoff and I the other day. I got kind of a kick out of the fact that you know, the turf sprint will no longer be the FU turf sprint.
The turf sprint always appeared very nicely in the past performances as the FU turf sprint. It also was funny that I never encountered anyone who actually knew what Frontier Utilities even was, let alone use them for electricity service, but they did sponsor the FU turf sprint. So nice to, I see they have a new sponsor. This is
a new
Pulse Power. Turf sprint. Yes, so now it's the PP turf sprint. So we moved from the FU to the PP, and we're moving along. We would joke about it quite frequently in the racetrack about not only the FU, but of course the Felix Unger reference that you can make off of that. And that's a fun race as well. It's actually a good group. Fast Boat, who narrowly missed last year, is back, and he looks like a major contender. Share the Upside, the horse that's, I think, going to probably end up going off the favorite. He's got good speed and is drawn inside for the meets top connections. I thought Mo Maverick was dangerous as well. And, it looks like you could go quite a few different directions. The Stoner Side Sprint, which is a race later, is another interesting bunch. Nitrous is the horse to beat, I would say, from the inside. But, again, I mean, you're talking about an off-the-pace horse that's that's drawn on that rail. So you want to pay good attention to the first half of the card before you play your pick five and see what you're going to do with Nitrous, because Hollis, who's run on the far outside, probably wants to go shorter when push comes to shove. He's a very talented horse with a lot of speed. So one thing I'll say, if anybody's listening to this on podcast over the weekend as well before this card, if the early pick five carries on Sunday, it goes directly into the late pick five.
Right.
So this is something that's a Texas rule, and it has to go into the next sequence. So because they added the early pick five, if it carries, it will go into the late one. I know Frank wanted to make sure that everybody knows that, because it happened last year. And you know, I think there's a decent chance it could this year with the fifth leg, of course, being that the Pulse Power Turf Sprint and having some pretty competitive big fields in the second and third leading into it.
It's fun. In terms of starting that pick five in the sprint, in the Stars and Stripes, is Nitrous heavy lean?
I would probably use he and Hollis, and I really don't know where I'd go in terms of backups. It looks like one of those two should win. It might take Raylo Gutierrez nursing Hollis along a little bit to get to six furlongs. Skyride was a very impressive winner last time out and got an 87 fig, which would be good enough to contend if Nitrous somehow runs into problems. So maybe you include him as a backup. J.R. Caldwell's having a very, very good meet. And, of course, as a trainer, that's perfectly capable of having a horse ready, you know, on a bigger stage. Unmoored also was an impressive winner in an off-the-turf race at Pimlico. You know, that was a five furlong, so it doesn't give you a whole ton of confidence. I will say that he got involved in a pace that did not hold up last time out in the forego. So he might be one that you want to give some consideration as well, given that he's got some speed and can sit a little bit off of it if they can work out that kind of trip.
Sunday, Sam Houston. It is the classic, ladies' classic card, the festival, and a lot of fun. Nick, let's rifle through the cross country tomorrow and New York and Tampa and Oakland.
Yeah, and worth noting, I'm not sure if I'm sure you've talked about it at some point, but Naira Betts bringing back the Aqueduct Saturday contest starting tomorrow.
Oh, good. I did not mention that. Thank you.
Yeah, $300 an entry, $200 bankroll, $100 prize. And I think as of right now, they're planning on doing a $3,000 buy-in on both Gotham and Wood Day, which I imagine would carry with them some maybe Belmont Stakes seats and or NHC, BCBC, something like that. So something to keep an eye on. The eighth is the leg, I believe, is the leg that kicks off the cross-country pick five at Aqueduct. And
yes,
Galani Brigade is going to be probably a pretty big favorite. He failed last time out at 7-5 going a mile, now cuts back in distance. I think he's better suited to sprinting. The inside I don't think is a particularly good result as far as post positions go, but he's supposed to beat these horses when push comes to shove. I don't think that I'd want to single him by any means. I'll probably find a way to use Blind Willie McTell, who's moving back into the New York bred ranks. He has to drop in class in order to do it. And Philly Kay, in a race that was falling apart last time out, was trying to come up the inside, which is not always the easiest thing. I thought that if you used him, you kind of had to use Bronx Bomber, which is why I wanted to maybe just gloss over Silly K. But it's that kind of situation, and I think that makes the thing a lot tougher than it needs to be. So if you have an opinion on a horse like South Africa, you might want to use him. I'm not a big fan. I thought he was really took advantage of circumstances in those two wins, and last time out was second to a horse that's inferior to what he's meeting today. So I would probably concentrate on the 1, 2, and 7. Or I'm sorry, 1, 1, and 5, using the 2, 4, and 7 as backups. The first Oakland leg is the Martha Washington, and if I'm going in order correctly, I believe I am. And yeah, the Martha Washington looks like kind of a matchup between Joyce Rocket and Coach. But I will say that I actually am a little intrigued by Lady Lily. I thought that Lady Lily didn't have the best of it last time out and ended up tiring a bit late. He kind of wanted to make wide moves at Churchill that day, and she was a little bit stuck inside. I didn't think that was the best place for her to be. I'm not sure if she's good enough to beat these horses, but she's the alternative. I mean, you're mainly using those two, the 1 and 3. I thought that Coach was maybe a tad disappointing last time out in the Goldenrod after the way she ran in the Rags to Riches. I just think she ran into better horses in the Goldenrod than she had faced in the Rags to Riches. With that said, I mean, you see how these Steve Asmussen horses with speed run at Oaklawn, and I think you can plan on Joy's Rocket running very well. She'll be on a mission to get to the early lead from that inside post right from the start, and that might be all it takes. The Tampa leg is the eighth, which is a maiden special weight race with a small purse and some very good horses, which Tampa seems to have patented. And you know, the horses you're talking about are Rastafara and Tranquilina, along with potentially Captivance for Christophe Clement. And you're talking about horses like Stone Street owned, Peter Brandt owned, and they're running at Tampa for $22,000. Sort of amazing. Rastafara is a first-time starter by Shamardal, whose progeny are about 20% first-time turf. The interesting pedigree is Tranquilina on the outside. Clement trainee is by Liam's Map, whose progeny went on debut on the turf at an 11% clip, but the second family is huge. The Dam is a half to Seek and Destroy, and Tammy the Torpedo, who ironically were both stakes winners for Chad Brown, who trains Rastafara. So it looks like it's going to boil down to those two, and I could probably just use them and move on with it, because you get to an Aqueduct Nightcap, it's actually very competitive. You have a number of horses coming out of a mile and an eighth race where they battled pretty much the final three furlongs or so in kind of a ding-dong matchup. You'd be inclined to say that Mandatory has the most room to move forward going second off a lengthy layoff. That track was muddy that day. I really don't think that had too much of an impact on it. I'll say this. They bet Mandatory, and he ran. And so it feels like he's supposed to run better now, second off the layoff. Johnny Pump, I thought, was very disappointing. I thought he was going to be a heavy favorite and win that race for fun. He never really got that much money. I know he went off the 2-1 favorite. I thought he looked about 6-5 on paper. Mm. I thought he was underwhelming. I think you'd want to use Mandatory before him. The horses I couldn't figure out in this race were Continuation and Five Tool Player. Five Tool Player, of course, is a first-time starter by Medaglia d'Oro. He's got a good family on the Dam side. They paid a ton of money for him, so I think you're going to kind of have to use him. John Service is certainly capable of having one ready on debut. Continuation ran a really good second to an impressive winner on debut and looked like a horse that would clear the maiden ranks in no time. And now it's over a year later, and he's still a maiden. And he's run on the dirt. He's run on the synthetic. I'm not sure how to handle him. It looks to me like a race where I think you can make a case for using five or six horses, which is why hopefully in the Martha Washington you can narrow things down. And if you want to get a little bit bullish at Tampa, you can do the same thing, because I've not mentioned a horse like Mystic Knight, who I thought ran well, all things considered, last time at Churchill. And I think the dirt product at Churchill is better than what you see in New York on a daily basis. So I think there's a reason to believe that that Mystic Knight could have faced better and potentially has room to improve.
What about that Fat Clemenza?
And, of course, Clemenza, right. I mean, Clemenza at 5-2, who's a major player. I don't know if he's going to be able to wire the field. Love the name, of course. And I think he's a horse that you have to use. So it is really a very, very difficult maiden race. One, I think that I'm probably complicating too much. Clemenza could end up wiring this field, and I look sort of foolish for liking four or five horses. But he just feels like one that you don't want to completely trust. And, boy, there are so many interesting alternatives.
Well, and then, of course, that gets you to the nightcap of the cross-country pick five. And I know that there's a certain percentage of the audience that is going to see a Arkansas-bred allowance, money allowance, and be flummoxed, you know, especially when you're encountering, you know, stallions like Five Iron and Guest Star.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're certainly facing Icon Ike as well.
I like
that. You see some very interesting names in these races. Hightail, who is, I believe, was the last Breeders' Cup Juvenile Sprint
Surf
winner.
Sprint in California. Yeah,
Dirt Sprint. Right, there were two of them. There were two of them total. I think Hightail won as a maiden for Wayne Lucas for
that's
for
Calumet.
Yeah, it's interesting. People have picked up on what a lot of guys have been doing with success over the years at Oaklawn, which is claiming Arkansas breds at other tracks and then bringing them to Oaklawn. Right, and so that's something that's being done here, and so, you know, Little Tater and a couple of others are either trainer changes or first off the claim. These races end up chalking out a lot of times because they're just not competitive. The Mary Rose is the horse to beat, but I mean, as much as you want to find fault in Calvin Burrell, and Kenny Smith's a low percentage trainer now, he's a guy that's won a ton of races over the years. Betty Ann has faced way better horses and run way faster races than anybody in this field. So, I mean, maybe she's tough to trust on the win end. When she's been with Kenny Smith in the past, she's been competitive at this level. I thought she was pretty obvious and one that you had to use. I was going to use Mary Rose, her, and probably Taylor B. Swift, who goes off the claim by Cipriano Contreras. That leaves you with a decision on what to do with Too Pretty. Looks like she's training well. She is coming off a lengthy layoff, so there's a few question marks there. But I think that the winner comes from that lot, and you'll have to just maybe figure out how many you can afford to use after what gets to be a bit of a tough sequence towards the back end of it.
I thought that Many Sweet Treats had to be looked at.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those. I think the problem here is that if you don't narrow it down to two or three, all of a sudden you're using a ton. And Many Sweet Treats is coming off what looks like a pretty fast race. Granted, it was on a muddy track, but you know, it was one of those performances where if she takes a step forward off of this, she's going to be tough to beat.
And you're going to get a wet track tomorrow, looks like, Hammer said.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I was not sure about that, but it makes sense.
So, all right. Well, Nick, I appreciate it, and appreciate the early move up. It suited everybody's schedule. Mike Welsh is going to join us next, and we'll talk next Friday.
Sounds great, Steve. Have a good weekend.
Nick Tamaro, NTAM, NTAMM 1215, and go easy on those. Morning line cracks. It's Sam Houston. Quick break, our last of the morning, and Mike Welsh going to visit, and we'll get into the stakes with him at Gulfstream. The Holy Bull, the Swedish Chant, the Forward Gal, as well as the Swale, and the Kitten's Joy. Back after this, there's also a maiden race, the 7th, that's got a couple of pedigrees that are of note. Tis a Magician's baby brother in that spot. Back after this, Mike Welch, and then some Keith Shamblin later as well.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.